Hi, and welcome to another episode of Are We There Yet? The podcast about ADHD and success and the correlation between both. I'm very excited about the guest tonight because we have the happiest man in the world. This man could literally tell me that my childhood pet has died, and so long as he laughed at the end of it, I'd be totally okay with it. He could even tell me that he killed my childhood pet and I'd still be totally fine with it, so long as he was laughing when he told me. Hi, Bandili, how are you?
that's actually like a tremendous intro. I'm fantastic just because of that intro. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm very good. I've missed you. It's been a while since we've had a proper chat.
It's been such a long time.
I just recorded for the history books.
Yeah. But I'm excited to see you. It's been a long time for good reason though. As the lockdowns became lower and lower, I just needed to get out the house, man. So, but it's good to connect with you again.
Exactly. You had to go see, you know, real people, not imaginary people on the internet. But, Mandy, why don't you tell...
your simulation, you know.
yeah, exactly. That's it. There's a new Matrix. I'm actually the star of it. But, Mandy, why don't you tell us what it is you actually do for a living?
Okay. So I've got a real like long multi-syllabic title, which I'll shorten and just say, I work for a progressive economics think tank. So I'm an economist, I'm a development economist, but I work in the social justice space, in particular in economic justice. And so my day job is in a think tank that does research and policy. And what I specifically do, though, is I do economics education for activists. So grassroots activists, people who like, you know, fight big mining corporations who pollute in their local communities, people who work in trade unions, all that sort of thing. I do that work with activists, teaching them about economic policy, what economics as a discipline is about, in order to help further their struggles. That's what I do as a day job. As a night job, I run a small youth-led, like a mini version of my day job, a youth-led social enterprise called Rethink Africa. And we do work that has to do with youth and also economic justice, gender equity, gender-based violence, you know, all those sorts of things. And I do that on the side. We also do a bit of research and dialogues. So yeah, that's what I do.
Dude, that's all that shit sounds really heavy.
Yeah, it's intense. But I think the subject matter is intense, but kind of
it's
the
important
actual work of training. No, but it's training people and educating people about stuff that matters to them, but always seems like it's too complicated. So most people think of the boring part of economics. But if I say to people, look, if you want to find out more about like how jobs are created or find out more about how the economy works, and I deliver the material in an interesting, engaging way, that's what my day job is about. It's really like making economics accessible and relevant to people. So it's not like I'm not the funny guy who wears a bow tie and is on BBC, whatever. I don't know what the number is. But on our side, it's SABC3 that like says, oh, well, there's inflation and the gross investments and the gold price is doing this. I try and take these complicated concepts and I make them relevant to people's everyday lives.
Nice. See when it comes to success and like my own perception of it, it's very much like there are job titles and things that are, you've been told these are successful jobs and successful roles and all that sort of thing. But I think there's another element that I've just now realized myself, which is basically, if I'm not going to be able to repeat your job title or what you do, yep, that's it. I'm gonna say that's success. If I don't know what it is, so that there we go. And there's lots of things I don't know. But I think
that's interesting, man. I think it's quite a niche job. Already people who work in like social justice or the NGO sector, the jobs are quite niche. They're not about the money. They're about making a positive change in the world. Mm-hmm. And so even this, and my job is niche because it marries these very serious discipline of economics, but it's the core of the job is about empowering people, giving people information, teaching them, building their capacity to engage with like debates and like minimum wages, debates about, you know, the environment and things like that. So I count it as a really fun job because there's a high amount of like fulfillment. Like I wake up every day and try and make the world a better place and empower people
to the teacher manna fish sort of job, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Like there'll be people out there who will literally, instead of telling people and empowering people on how to do it, they'll just be like, I'll do it for you. It'll cost you X.
Yeah.
Whereas you're taking the other approach to it. It's like, I'll teach you as to how to understand it and how to actually use it for your own benefit.
Yeah.
That's good, man. So what would you say that your perception of success is? Like, see, when you were younger, like, what was the sort of perception like your parents sort of put on you?
Lol. So since I was a kid, man, I was a very intellectually curious kid. My family kind of, my dad was a teacher, and mom was a nurse, but we were really to people who don't know and who are really struggling and want to find out my accents, I'm from South Africa. And I live in Johannesburg. I could have started with that if you've been trying to place my accent. But we come from a family that's really like valued education. And so since I was a kid, just like read. That was my like way of stimming. I just read through encyclopedias. And I think from a young age, both my parents and I have known that I'd probably follow like the academic routes. Be like a lecturer, have a PhD, you know, do that sort of thing. And so as a kid, they'd led me down that way, facilitated me going down that way. But I ended up not. I ended up, you know, changing tack right in the middle of my uni studies. And I know most people with ADHD would know that moment where you kind of have had the plan your whole life and then things come rumbling, tumbling down. But yeah, as a kid, it was very much being focused on academia and the life plan was kind of having a PhD in whatever at around this age.
Mm-hmm. See, it's funny that you're saying about we have that moment where you go, oh no, I'm just going to throw this book I've been writing for years out the window and just write something else. When I was in school, I really like graphic design and things, and I went to college for graphic design, and that's like UK college, not like American college.
The one you see on TV with
friends. This is like UK college, which is like basically it's like just another year of high school type thing to then help you get into university. But my work at the time offered me additional hours so that I could, and I was like, oh, I'll do that, then I'll go travel. I didn't travel. And they also didn't give me the extra hours. I just kept on working. But what I did do was my very first tattoo. This is really good for an audio podcast, but I have a tattoo on my wrist, which is the most random, like, little design going.
The cartoon characters that look like this tattoo.
It's literally Pi. I drew Pi on the back of a sketchbook and then made it into a little man and then just drew like a splodge. And then I got that tattooed on me, and I got the tattooed on me as a reminder to go and finish college and do graphic design. I'm 32 soon. I'm not going back to college. That's not happening. I've been in the bank for way too long. I'm not going back now. But it's just quite funny. It's like there's a lot of people I reckon who have went, I will go back to it. I'll just put on pause for a minute and I'll go and do this other thing. And then that's it. That's the lie we all tell ourselves. It's like, I'll just do this other thing.
That's exactly right. And I think I had a similar story where I also just had this plan and had planned to kind of at least take a break from like the academic life and go into like this social justice NGO sector. And I've kind of stayed there because it really fulfilled the thing that academia lacks, which is like connecting with people. It's the social part. Yeah. It's like being an academic is like sitting at a desk, having the laptop stare at you for months and weeks on end. And I really wanted to do that. So a bit more of like the journey I went on is there was this plan, but I got to university age. So like this is like my year 12, got a scholarship, was an entrepreneurship scholarship. The conditions were kind of like, we think you're a special person, we'll give you 4 years of education to go change the world. So literally it wasn't like a normal scholarship where you work with like a bank funds you and you have to go work for the bank or whatever. They just said, we've found some talented people and we'd like to fund them, just like, you know, use your creative.
No strings attached.
The way that it's a very rigorous process though of how they select you. So you go to like a 3-day selection camp and they give you like business case like scenarios. So it was the year before South Africa hosted the 2010 World Cup. So like our theme was like the World Cup. So they'd give you a business, say, look, you're a marketing firm, develop a campaign for this, or you're a business that's doing this. And so like a lot of like creative thinking and creative problem solving problems and they test and select people who think creatively, but also have a vision to like do awesome things in the future. I got funded for 4 years, but I, like a typical ADHDer, I didn't know what to do. So I kind of did a PPE, which is like an economics and philosophy degree. But my plan in varsity was I really enjoyed philosophy. So politics, philosophy, and economics. I really enjoyed philosophy. And I was planning to do philosophy for the rest of my life as an academic, just like writing and thinking about things. And the derailment happened sometime in my honors year when the brick wall most of us hit with college is having to write a long paper. So if you make it out through like the undergrad parts, it's like, tests and whatever, the big problem is writing a thesis. And I had been a star student for all my life, basically, an A student. And when I didn't have the external pressure of like exams, that's when the plane started to crash. So after having that knock of like not being able to seeing that my plan was that I'd do like writing of long papers, you know, the work that academics do, seeing that that didn't match up well with the ADHD, I kind of was like, let me try something different. Let me try something in the economics field. And I'd made so many friends and networks that it was like, okay, with this company we started up called Rethink Africa. And I kind of just then went to a completely different track. And that's what's
on. Sorry, my mind's still a wee bit blown at the philosophy / economics, like double, because those two don't.
you'd never think about it. But that's precisely it. It's that just being curious about how. Okay, so here's the link. They are both disciplines are concerned with understanding how the world works at like a fundamental level. So the way, if you want to understand politics or sociology or like international relations, the root of all of that is economics. Because it's just about like
how people work, the root of that's philosophy.
Exactly, to understand how people work, or all systems of knowledge and science, that's philosophy. And I think the ADHD brain. I'm really going. I think you've unlocked me now, Ross. You must tell me to stop. But I think what's really cool and where that comes from is like how the ADHD brain can hyper-focus.
Braves that want for understanding.
And I had a philosophy lecturer, Professor Tobias, who said, people become philosophers when there's a problem that eats at you for years and you try to solve it. And that practice of trying to solve, so like a deep problem. So if you have suffered an injustice, or, you know, you're trying to think about why is there poverty in the world, or you have had a trauma or whatever, or, you know, you're going through a religious phase and you're really trying to figure out God or whatever, that process of having something that eats at you and you try to figure out, that's what builds the toolkit for philosophy. And I think as an ADHDer, I've been trying to figure out how everything works. And yeah, so that's how that combo comes together.
So how old were you when you were diagnosed then?
Oh man, I was 20. Dude, it's I'm on Christmas break, so my mental math is gonna be rusty. But in like 2014, call it. So I would have been like 23.
So the, what you're talking about now, about like the ADHD brain trying to understand, this is all hindsight. This wasn't at the time that you were like, oh, I have ADHD, my brain isn't gonna let me.
Oh, like, no, yeah, that's all hindsight. I've always known that I like understanding how things work. It's the link is then post, and especially like digging, like the diagnosis, I think is very weird in that, in order for them to confirm it, so I'd been misdiagnosed with the comorbidities I have, like anxiety, depression. Mm-hmm. There was a time when I thought I had bipolar, but when like the psychiatrist was like, hey, you need to dig back into your past, like, I'd ideally want to speak to your parents, you know, and you think about, oh, this is the thing I used to do when I was like four, or when I was a kid, I struggled to sleep. I always used to sleep with the fan on, no matter what the way. I mean, I come from a hot town, but it's right here on the coast.
I like that. From a hot town. I live in Africa, town. And I
it's
come
a place
from a hot
that is
town.
Very hot. It's so hot right now. It's kind of like, it's like probably like 30 degrees right now.
For those listening, you can't see the tiny, tiny violin that I have for Bandele right now and the heat that he has whilst I'm sitting in my house with the heating on, wearing a hoodie because it is 4 degrees.
Oh, no.
Dude. Celsius, not Fahrenheit.
Oh, wow, well, that would be it. Another disaster.
Just to clarify for people who like to do ridiculous maths when it comes to temperatures. But
that was me.
So when you were younger then, like the impression of success that your parents sort of brought you up on was like academia. That was the journey of to be successful, this is what ideally you would have. Yes.
Yeah.
So what would you say your perception of success is now?
Yikes. I think it's a mixture between personal inner fulfillment and doing something useful in the world. So it's kind of like, so it's a mixture. So I'd count my life as successful if of all these things that I, like the seven things or seven new projects I think about every week, like, do I fulfill those things, the things that I love to do, like just that are my personal interests? Mm-hmm. Do I grow in my skills? And then secondly, I think because I've always had the academic focus, and I got into like politics quite early in my university career. Something in me has like gone like money has never featured in it, for example. So having money and a successful career has never actually featured in it. And I think my parents played a good role, but also I think I also had made peace a long time ago that I'm probably not going to be like a corporate lawyer that like, you know, works 40-hour weeks or 60-hour weeks or whatever. So that that vision of success now is really about saying, have I made an impact in the world? Have I gone out and created things and empowered people? But secondly, the first thing I mentioned, it's about saying all these projects that I want to do, learning languages or, learning, teaching myself how to code. Those are the things that I'm going to look back on the next 10 years I turned 30 at the end of last week.
Oh, happy birthday. Welcome to the fun generation.
Disgusting. I'm a 30-year-old.
I've been so tired since I turned 30.
Dog, yeah. Whenever I sit down, I make sounds, dog. It's so when I do my stock take in 10 years, when I turn 40, those are the sorts of things I'm gonna look at as successful.
So you're basically, I like to try and simplify and make a metaphor on something just to kind of help it work out better in my brain. So your success isn't in the moment success. Your perception of success now is basically the feather on the scale success.
Yeah. Or rather, further on the scale. Say a bit more about that.
So there's, I think it's Egyptian theology where when you die,
man, the Highlands accent
puts you on a set of scales with a feather.
Yeah, feather on this. Sorry, yes.
I'm sorry. I will enunciate better so that everyone can understand me.
Yeah. Yes. So very much feather on the scales when Anubis.
That's very interesting. That's not an answer I've had before. It's a very interesting answer. I've had a rough couple of months recently, and I've kind of changed my own perception a little bit because my own perception was very much in more recent time about just wanting to be happy. That was it.
Yeah.
And maybe this is just sad. I mean, as an SAD, not as in the emotion. But I'm coming to terms with the fact that I might have sad. But what I've then kind of came to realize is that saying that my version of success is just to be happy seems like shooting for the stars a little bit too much. Yeah. So I've kind of readjusted a little bit, and now all I want to be is content. I don't need to be happy all the time. I just need to be content.
Sure.
And life can be easier for me if I can accept being content as the goal.
Yeah. I think that resonates a bit. Sorry to cut you there. I think that resonates a bit. I think that was a lot of my early 20s. Kind of in some ways readjusting my expectations. So around the time of my diagnosis, there was a lot of that, mourning the fact that, look, there's things I won't be able to do. I won't get my PhD, quote unquote, in time. There's a corporate or an entrepreneurship business, a career that I don't think I'll be able to handle, and mourning that sort of thing. So I think that has definitely been part of my journey, just revising down my expectations and trying to be content.
Yeah.
But the answer I just gave you has also shifted this year. So sorry. I've had a really good 2021. And it's not fantastic. Bad things happened. But I started meds. I've been afraid of meds. I've titrated, but basically Vyvanse became available in South Africa in June of this year, and I feel sick at how drastically my life improved in a matter of 2.5 weeks.
Yeah, it's mad.
I'm sick and I'm trying to find the English here. It is 10, half past 10 during Christmas break. So my maths and my English are gone. But like, I'm resentful of how like my life has, I enjoyed a certain quality of life and that instantly, and I don't think it will apply to everyone, but like my life did change after starting meds, seeing the course, titrating to, you know, just twice, and then I got the right dose. And everything else just got unlocked. Still deal with insomnia now, but like there was that. And then I was able to do other work. So like seeing a psychologist, sorting out a lot of personal issues. And actually towards the end of the year, doing like a, like some productivity training with an ADHD coach. So my coach, he's got ADHD as well, but like we did like work focused stuff. And then I've also done like some career training. The point for this conversation, of course, is that realizing that there is a part of me that's been unlocked and that I can access it has kind of shifted my gaze upwards towards the stars, I could say. Mm-hmm. Like the stuff that I couldn't do at all, which I kind of now have a hope to be able to do. And so I'm kind of expanding myself and thinking like, I'd written such and such a thing off as never being able to do it. But I think in taking the plunge with medication, this is the first time I tried it right around my diagnosis. I just felt ill and it like, and I like, fine, hey, I'll say it now. Your audience has gotten to know me. Like it messes my libido, all sorts, dude, all sorts of stuff. And yeah, when you go libido, that's not a negotiable. Fine, give me nausea. Give me stomach cramp. Give me a rash. Give me projectile diarrhea. Don't take away my
libido. Wow.
I was listing all the bad symptoms you can think of, but like
give me sudden death. Any of these other possible side effects, please. My favorite thing when you get med, right, and like you read the possible side effects, and it always comes to this thing, it's like, here are the possible side effects. If you experience any of these, call your doctor immediately.
Yeah.
And in that list, they have sudden death. And it's like, when like, during experiencing sudden death, when do I call the doctor? Do I get nervous to call him? Or like, dude, can you just hold the feather for a second? I've got my GP on the phone. Like, what?
Hi, Dr. Gray. I'm in the passage to the underworld. my signal's not that great. Hi, sorry, Anubis, can you give it down?
Can I just say, right? How boring is monotheism? In comparison, like it just doesn't. There is no comparison. But anyway,
Anubis
has come up in this conversation
sheet,
way too
which
often.
It's always like an A5 sheet when you unfold it properly and it's got this huge list and then it's all folded and then
And you can't get back in the box.
I took that plunge after kind of cutting things cold right around, so it would have been 4 years ago, around the time of my initial diagnosis. I think it's been work, man. So even defining success, even thinking carefully about what success means, and part of what's bad is also like the philosophy brain of like really, like literally, if you have a philosophy training or you're a philosopher, your day job is thinking about the meaning of things, the meaning of life, the meaning of right and wrong, those sorts of things. So defining what a well-lived life
I feel like there's two different types of philosophers though, right?
Yeah.
There's the type who can explain, there's the type who knows it, and then there's the type who explains it.
Yeah.
Like you've got,
and which one is the good kind?
Oh, definitely the one who can explain it. See someone who, and it's like I constantly talk in metaphors, and I said
that's a good, that's a good, like, that's a good.
I said something, it's like, it's so that you can understand what I'm thinking. And then I was like, no, fuck you, actually. It's not for you. It's so I know what I'm thinking. And yeah, it's so that I can remember it later. Like, there was one I was telling, someone was asking me the other day, like, I spoke to Rox and stuff about, like, just how I've been feeling recently. And I was beating around the bush, which I hate. And I was getting myself frustrated because I couldn't get the sentence out that I was looking for that would explain it. And then it came to me, right? And it was basically, this is the most succinct way I've been able to come to explain what having ADHD is when it's in its bad times, right? How it is. And I was like, because the most common thing we get told is, why don't you just do it, right? And you can't explain it. And I said, it's like, you know how to tie your shoelaces.
Yeah.
But there's something stopping you. You can't reach. You can't get down there for whatever. You just can't do it. So instead, you just don't tie your shoelaces.
Yeah.
And eventually,
and you walk with a waddle, you're going to trip. You kick your feet.
You're going to trip up and it's going to hurt like fuck. And that is the only way I can explain it. Is that it's basically, you know what to do. You just can't do it until you get hurt.
And I think the analogy thing is I resonate, man, because you're spending your life trying to explain this thing to everyone and you actually get good analogy. So I absolutely love it. I will walk around the day and just think about, so at different analogies. I literally, my day job, if I'm having to explain, say, the difference, maybe when we're doing like with my side business, or my side enterprise, you know, maybe explaining what are the differences between sex, gender, and sexual orientation, or whatever the case might be. You kind of have to speak in metaphors and say, okay, you know, maybe this is, and please don't quote me on this, is just a way of explaining it to people who don't understand this. I don't want anyone to take it the wrong way. But you might say, oh, you know, sex is the body parts you have, so almost like hardware, where gender expression software. So it's the cultural stuff, you know, whatever. I think that's a nice, like, you know, thing that I walk around and, you know, it's all these shower thoughts. So that's one thing that I think I do. I have shower thoughts and then I go over them over and over and then I put them in my pocket to just deploy them. If someone needs to know, like, what, or the one I use for the economy is a machine that sends money right around from businesses to households and from households to businesses. And it's a never ending cycle. And the point of economic policy is to pump more water around the machine. And so, like, that in a context of me explaining what the economy is, like, clicks for people. So yeah, so I get the analogies thing. It's like a very, it's an important thing, but then you learn it from having this condition because it's just things you just can't explain. And I followed you down the rant.
So there was another point I was going to say throughout that, and it's totally gone.
Sorry, man.
No, it's not you. It's genuinely, this happens all the time. I don't really edit these either. And by don't really, I don't edit them. This will all be there just because I don't edit.
Oh, man. But, so my comment on projectile diarrhea will be there.
Yeah, too. Oh, that, I'm going to make a sound clip of that, man. That's my new ringtone.
please don't put me in your promo material.
that's happening.
All the wonderful things I said. Yeah, good.
That's what I was going to say. So, like, I'm kind of a year ahead of you. So I started my meds last year.
Yeah.
But I didn't have the period of, like, should I take them, should I not? Because I got diagnosed and then just took them. I was 2019, I got diagnosed. But so last year, 2020 was a great year for me. And it's not that 2021's been a bad year. It hasn't at all. My beard looks absolutely amazing right now. It's been a great year for my beard. And I mean my physical beard, not my female beard. But
You'd have to put a Sorry, a director's note and saying what the heck the Emailpia is. sorry, don't lose your train of thought. Let's keep on.
But yeah, so this year, and this is, I'm seeing this as an actual piece of advice to you as well, right? Not just as a story, but last year I was really good with it. I was really good with how I took my meds. I was really good with how I slept, all that stuff. I was great with it. This year, I've been horrendous, like really, really bad. Like I think like for the first 4 months of the year, I didn't go to bed before like 2 a.m. Like I was just a wreck, and I was getting up at like 6 a.m. and 7 a.m. Like I was just horrendous. And I was using my meds more as caffeine than I was like for actual ADHD. It was really bad. And it's only recently, and by recently, I mean like Monday, that I've been like, I always have the thought, I need to try and do this. But yeah, because me and Rox had this conversation at the start of the week about like how I'm going to go about it and what I need to do and how she can help me and things. Because see, we're really bad at keeping up routines, yeah, which is why the first year me and Med was great. But then I stopped the whole routine of it. So I like things starting at the start of the year. So it's like, right, we're on it. I'm going to be, I'm not saying I'm going to start working out every day. I'm not but I'm going to make more of a conscious effort to at least eat. And I don't mean as in like, I basically eat at night once my meds wear off. But the problem is eating during the day, I was taking my meds without anything in my stomach.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you know this, but they don't work when you do that. Oh. And I also just found out, it was quite fated actually, because I had this whole conversation with Rox on, I think it was Monday or Tuesday. Monday, I had this whole conversation with her. And then on Tuesday, my doctor phoned me, like my psychiatrist phoned me. It was a scheduled appointment. I just hadn't put it down anywhere.
Yeah.
And she phoned me and we were just talking through things. So we're now like going to check and make sure that basically see if I have depression or if I have sad or if I'm just low because, you know, the world's gone to hell. Like, or what it is. But if we're going to see how it goes, I might have to reduce my meds, I might have to change my meds, I might have to go on SSRIs. Don't know yet. It's all up in the air. But one thing that I asked my doc about is because I work from home, I'm really bad for my vape never leaving my mouth.
Yeah.
And
oh man, I get you. I just had COVID last year, around this time, and I was able to kick smoking for 7 months. And then I had to go back, the working from home and, you know, this like the isolation and not having like stuff to do. But yeah, I get you.
I didn't realize that nicotine increases your metabolism, so you run through your meds quicker.
Oh, so you get to kind of like, is it like a long acting?
Yeah, I'm on Concerta, so like it should last me my work day. It should last me my work day. And I'm getting to like, last couple of weeks, I could probably tell you by like lunchtime.
Yeah.
I'm on Medicaid. Like there is
like you're not much. You're running low on the juice. Okay. No, yeah. I get it.
It's also kind of like because nicotine is a stimulant, and I just kind of space out. So I'm taking meds to stop me from spacing out, but then I'm effectively over medicating myself with a vape.
Yeah.
So I'm spacing out.
I get you.
It's brutal. But it's the thing you don't know. You don't realize that that's a thing. And like I'm on a high dose. I'm on like 72 milligrams of Concerta a day?
Yeah.
With sometimes taking top ups of Ritalin in the afternoon, which my doctor has told me I have to stop doing because my blood pressure is apparently skyrocketing. But anyway, this isn't Ross's therapy session. But it's the things you don't know. So I'm just putting this out to you as, because you, I remember when you started your meds actually, because you, you messaged me and were like, what happens if you take your meds and have coffee?
And I was sorry, people might not have heard that over my laugh, but what happens if you take your
meds dose, and then have like, coffee?
And then have coffee. And
do you remember what my reply was?
What happened was, it was nice, like proper coffee from Ethiopia. So it was like a full, I don't know if it's called a full blend or full roast or whatever.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like crappy office coffee. And your
real shit was going down.
It was, I think I had to have a jog. I didn't sleep until like 4 a.m. the next day, which is awful, but then also cool. But like,
do you remember what my answer was, though, Bandele?
Tell me, remind me what
my answer was. Basically, like, you either have fun or you really don't.
Oh, you. I'll have to think back to see what happened.
I'm sure it was something like that.
Or the other thing. Sorry to catch you there. The other thing that I think has once happened to me is double dosing. I usually get up and have it like, I stir at like 6 a.m., if not 5:45. And I kind of, what I've done now is I leave a glass of water and a tablet next to my bed. So that as soon as I stir, I pop it. And then if I'm tired enough to kind of fall asleep, whatever, or I'll be on Twitter. But then, so once I get into like the work day at like 8, you know, we kind of have to I kind of then get out of the juice is running but if I haven't much later than that, good night to sleep at night. But I hear advice. I take the advice, but I also think there's some nice other advice hidden there. I think these things are about learning, man. And back on like the contentment discussion, that's like a lifelong thing to accept, and it's hard to accept, but I think it helps to accept it, that you'll be constantly learning new things and constantly not living up to what you expected. So you can hope to have medication down for the rest of your life, but you know, they might come that time where it's like, oh, this thing has worked for the last 3 years. In the fourth year, it just stopped working. And you just need to, I hope to also, and I hope for everyone to kind of like, just always have that perspective that, it's going to change, or it might change, or whatever. Always reach out to someone and find out. And
That's the hard thing, man.
It's hard, man.
Reaching out to someone. And like I literally had like one of my mates like grab me at the weekend, and he was just like, dude, you're just not fucking well. that cuts through the bullshit. Yep, that's true.
That's straightforward. Although I do remember one of my favorite chats with you was one day I just joined the Hive, and I had just had like made a community and friends out of everyone. And I kind of was in despair at work. And then I go, oh, wait, I've got a family. And then I remember DMing you on Twitter. I'll check my DM as to when it was. And I was like, hey, Ross, I just need someone to talk to. And that was really nice, man. So here's your public award for that. It was really like, it was cool. But yeah.
Yeah. I think everyone needs that. And there's George that comes to the party. George is my rubber duck.
Yeah.
It's George's thing where he said to me that basically, like, if you can go into a bath with a rubber duck and you can talk at the rubber duck and come to the solution, that's all you need. Is you just need the rubber duck to talk to.
Yeah.
And he's my rubber duck. So if I'm at work or anything, I'm like, dude, I'm spiraling here. I'll just go and I'll basically just talk at him. And it definitely helps. 1,000% helps. But so just before we wrap up, then there's one final question.
Cool.
Do you feel that your ADHD has helped or hindered your current success?
I'd love to do this podcast thing. It's one of the things that I want to do in the next, like over the next year. I've produced some shows. And I say that because I knew that question was going to come. When I was thinking about this podcast, I knew it was exactly, I was like, what questions would I ask if I was producing this? And that was one of the big things. And so I'm going to give you like a bit of a detailed answer because I've thought about this quite a bit. I think it, because I've made peace with the fact that like I've had it, this condition my whole life, even though I didn't know, I actually, what that has caused that like, I actually can't imagine myself being different. Like I'm this guy who's a weirdo, who's been a weirdo his whole life, but like a cool weirdo, like a weirdo that's interesting to talk to and whatever, like, you know, the nice yeah. weirdo. And so in that sense, I just don't know what a non-ADHD like version of me looks like. I think it has hindered a lot of my success, you know, just because of like the anxiety and depression and the challenges I've overcome. But I think currently where I'm at, so you've asked my current success, I think it makes me like a special person. And I actually don't feel weird because I've had this condition for so long. Saying weird things like that is weird if a normal person says it. But I say it actually like with, it's like a real thing. I think it's, I'm a special person. And so it makes me unique. It makes me, I think, interesting. It makes me interesting to myself. It makes me happy. It's made me an empathetic person because like you go through like all the stuff and it just increases. Either you go the bad way where like you don't really like where you're like antisocial and stuff, but I think it's made me an empathetic person. And I think, and I count those as good things. Like over the last few years, in really thinking and tackling this and having my diagnosis and being okay and realizing that I'm not broken or that like all my challenges aren't out of a lack of willpower, they're just this condition, I've made peace mm-hmm. with myself. And I think because of that, I see all these things as positives. So yeah, it's hindered me. There's career choices that I would have made differently. There's relationship choices I would have made differently. I would have been a better partner. I would not be a deadbeat son, as I like to say about my current. Oh no, I'm now starting a thread while we're at. Anyway, I'm at home now. I haven't been home the whole year. I've only taken three. Yeah, I've been this since I left last Christmas. I have not visited home once, and I phone very irregularly. So one running joke I have with my mom is that, oh, mom, I'm a deadbeat son, and I don't call you, and I'm sorry.
Thank you for explaining that.
Sorry about that. I just said so often.
I was about to bitch slap you.
It's like So anyway, that's it. What was my train of thought? But my train of thought was, my relationships are improving, and I don't know. I'm happy to share that I'm in a good space. It's now that I'm making peace with the condition, you know. That's where I'm at.
No, that's good. Thanks very much, Mandy. As always, I love talking to you. Anyway,
it's been really great, man. I hope to be part of the party soon.
Yeah. And for anyone who doesn't know what Bandil is talking about, he's talking about the ADHD party that I host every Friday night at 9:30 UK time. Everyone's
which is
welcome.
11:30 PM South African Standard Time.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you. I just hear this like bitching, like whine.
Fantastic. I
can't really understand the words.
Tremendous.
But basically, if you have insomnia in South Africa, come along. But
no, the real insomniacs are like the oaks in like Australia, where it's fully like 4 a.m. and it's like
I love that. Like, I used to love it when like you'd get the likes of New Zealand, where people would literally like turn up and I'd be halfway through a crate of cider and they're putting milk in their cornflakes. Like it was just, it was so bizarre. But anyway,
briefly, thank you very much, total country count. Sorry, before you log off.
No, I don't know what the country count is. I have a whiteboard. I still haven't done it yet. I'll. How about this, right? I will make you a deal. I will start the country count from the 1st of January. Every party for 2022, I will put on my whiteboard the country. I'll go one step further. I will put the country that they are currently in and the country that they are from.
Sure. 100%.
Just for me.
And then print it out and then make a nice collage and then send it via mail and then it'll...
Yeah, do like a word clip thing or some shit. Yeah, it'll be great.
Yeah, that's cool, man. I've really enjoyed chatting to you.
Yeah, you too, man. Thanks very much again.
Cool.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by Teemo, the award-winning visual planning app that supports routines and time management. Teemo was designed specifically to support executive function and empowers users to take control of their schedules. Head to your app store and type T-I-I-M-O into the search bar to learn more. Teemo is available on Android, iOS, and smartwatch.